Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for hanging around with us today. 800-531-3815. Toll free coast to coast, 34 after the hour. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Comes every week by email. Join the happy throng of more than 10,000 subscribers to our site, to our show, and I mean to our newsletter. And this week's article, the feature article, is all about how to get ready for 2004. And I think the future is bright. And I talk about some of the things that you need to do to get ready for 2004 and beyond, and a couple of ideas about why you need to be wearing some sunglasses for the future. Walter Isaacson is our guest. He's the president of the Aspen Institute. He's a former chairman of CNN and managing editor of Time Magazine. You may know him as the author of Kissinger, a biography, and also co-author of The Wise Men, Six Friends, and The World They Made. He's the author of a book that's become one of my favorites, folks, Benjamin Franklin, An American Life. Walter, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's good for you to have me back, Jim. It's great talking to you again.
Well, thanks. It's good to have you back. And I tell you, more and more, I'm just enjoying this book so much. I'm glad it's a big, thick book, Walter. You know why?
Why is that?
Well, because I don't want to get through with it.
I hope it moves along pretty fast.
Well, it does. It does. But I just it's one. It's like the movie that you don't want to end. You know, you don't want to see the credits. But
fortunately, he lived to be an old man. He was 84 years old when he died. But you know, I think that the best title for him would be Small Business Advocate, just like you, because he was somebody always fighting for what he called the leather aprons, the small shopkeepers, artisans, business owners. And he said our democracy is going to depend on, what he called the middling people, the middle class, and also the small business owner and the entrepreneur. He was a great entrepreneur.
Well, you call him the first entrepreneur, and I agree with you on that. And you know, that attitude that you just told us about, that's, by the way, folks, it's all through this book, and the book is filled with you can almost see Benjamin Franklin winking and nodding and smirking at the elites and laughing at the elites. That really created some challenges for him in his life, didn't it, though, with some of the elites?
It certainly did, because you have to remember, most of the founders, even though he was friends with them, were from the upper classes or were merchants or were big landowners. And Franklin kept telling the Constitutional Convention, and even earlier on at the Continental Congress where they were writing the Declaration of Independence, let's not be afraid of democracy and having a democratic republic where the people get to choose their own leaders. Because most of the original founders were a little bit wary about democracy. They thought it would lead to mob rule. But Franklin kept saying, don't worry about the shopkeepers of this country. If you give them the power, they'll make a great democracy.
Yeah, many of the people did not want to give the masses the opportunity to influence the leadership of the country, did they?
And, you know, even the funny stuff he does, like Poor Richard's Almanac, part of the reason he does it is it's supposed to help be a training manual, almost the first How to Succeed in Business book for the middle class and the business owner and the entrepreneur and the shopkeeper. And so all those maxims in Poor Richard's Almanac, including, you know, the simple ones like a penny saved is a penny earned, that sort of thing, it comes from him trying to build up a prosperous middle class. He felt you had to have a prosperous middle class so you could have upstanding citizens who could, you know, uphold a democracy. Because as Poor Richard says, and that was, of course, Ben Franklin's pseudonym for the Almanac, mm-hmm. But as Poor Richard said, an empty sack can't stand upright.
Folks, I'm looking at the chronology. There's a three pages of toward the back of the book of the chronology of the life of Benjamin Franklin. And I'll tell you, Walter, I've enjoyed spending time in this thing, and I'm imagining what he's accomplished by the time you identify some of the things he's done here. For example, at the age of approximately 26, I guess it is. That's when he first started Poor Richard's Almanac at 26. I mean, he was writing some of these wise things and getting this information out as early as, in his mid-20s.
You know, he was actually writing wise things when he was 15 years old. He worked for his older brother at his older brother's newspaper in Boston. This is before he ran away to Philadelphia. His older brother, being the typical older brother, was kind of jealous of him and wouldn't let him write for the newspaper, so he starts writing under the pseudonym of Silence Duguid.
Yeah.
Now, Benjamin Franklin was a 15-year-old, sort of cheeky teenager. He's pretending to be a widowed old woman living in the countryside and writing Silence Duguid. And she has all sorts of maxims about how America has to have the right values and that sort of thing. So he was a pretty wise kid.
And of course, most of us have never heard of Silence Duguid, but when we come back, one of the things I want Walter to talk to us about is the outstanding service that Benjamin Franklin gave to his country, even before it was a country, basically, over in overseas in Europe, in France, and ultimately in England. Right after these messages, it's 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Walter Isaacson.
Yeah, I'm sitting on the...
We're back at 17 till, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, I did learn how to tell time while we were off the air for a couple of minutes there. I didn't mean to frighten you when I said 20 after earlier. It's just that sometimes I get a little dyslexic looking at the clock, but it's 17 until the hour right now, depending on where you are in the world. And Walter Isaacson is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's also the president of the Aspen Institute, currently the president of the Aspen Institute. He's had a very, very important career in his life, and now he's with the Aspen Institute. And, Walter, I want you to take a minute or so and tell us a little bit about the Aspen Institute and how small business owners can benefit from what you do. Walter, are you there?
We kept forming associations and clubs for people to discuss things and reach common ground and find common values. What we try to do, and we've done it for 50 years, is bring executives, businessmen, and others together to talk about the great values that have informed our civilization and our life, and use that discussion. And these are small seminars of great values, great ideas, in what's called the executive seminar or the leadership seminars or any of the other seminars we do, so that people can understand how to be better leaders, but also how to be tolerant, more effective members of their community, and lead more satisfied lives. That's the main thing we do at the Aspen Institute. It used to be, and we were talking about elitism and Benjamin Franklin in the first segment of this show, it used to be a rather elitist organization back when it was founded 55 years ago by people like Henry Luce and Robert Maynard Hutchins. It was by invitation only. But we now offer our 10 or 12 types of seminars, which are in Aspen, Colorado, or in Maryland, in the Y Plantation of Maryland, our other facility. We now offer them to any aspiring person who wants to take 1 week off and have sort of a vacation for the body, the mind, and the soul, and do a step back and understand the great values. You know, so, at certain points in our lives, and it happened to me when I was running CNN and other things, we say, okay, we've made some compromises, some trims, and we're getting kind of sick of the lack of values that underlie our lives, and we don't feel like we're being as effective as leaders. It's good to take a step back, and you start with Aristotle and Plato, and you get all the way to Gandhi and Patton and Martin Luther King, and you understand the notion of values and leadership.
How we can find that at the website? Give it to us, please.
Yeah, the website is www.aspeninstitute. That's all one word. .org. It's
okay,
not .com. It's aspeninstitute.org. Or you can just Google Aspen Institute. It's
right.
A-S-P-E-N. And the Aspen Institute is out in Aspen, Colorado, is where you do most of the stuff. We also run leadership seminars for young people. And then we're a traditional think tank based in Washington, which is my main headquarters. And we do everything from environment to education to foreign policy, like one of those think tanks in Washington. But the thing that excites me the most are these seminars that are now open to everybody, every aspiring businessman or woman. My wife just did it about 3 weeks ago, and one of the things you do is you put on the performance of Sophocles' Antigone, that play, because it helps you understand everything from civil disobedience to leadership to
right.
values. And so my wife got to be the queen and the performance of Antigone. So what it is, it's 20 people get together. I mean, 20 people per seminar. We have two moderators. They don't sort of teach the class. They just help facilitate the discussion based on reading. You can learn more. Just go to the Aspen Institute website.
So what you did, basically, is you Franklinized the Aspen Institute. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. I mean, when Franklin had been a great media executive, much better than I could ever have hoped to have been, but halfway through his life, he decides to step back from the media. He's run his newspaper and the postal service and his printing business and publishing, and he steps back and decides to start civic organizations and be engaged in the world of ideas and be engaged in the world of, you know, of civic works.
Mm-hmm.
His mother sort of asked him, she was baffled, asked him why he had done it. He wrote back to her, he said, "I'd rather have it said of me that he lived usefully than that he died rich." And so it was a way of learning how to live usefully. He also continued to make a lot of money, but he wanted to learn how to lead a useful life. And so he formed everything from the American Philosophical Society to the Leather Apron Club.
Right.
And those type of clubs were, unlike the other clubs in the colonies, they were not very elitist. You didn't have to be born to a particular social class or born to power in order to join one of Benjamin Franklin's clubs, the Library Club or any of them. And likewise, with the Aspen Institute, I think we have to modernize ourselves a bit. And it used to be a little bit like an exclusive club for the elite. And now I put it on the website, the AspenInstitute.org website, because I wanted anybody to feel they could come out to Aspen or to Maryland and do one of these seminars.
Walter, you're talking about the Internet. Benjamin Franklin would have been the very first Internet adopter. I mean, if somebody had presented him with an opportunity like this, if he were alive today, he would have been one of the leaders of this thing, wouldn't he?
Oh, if he were alive today, he'd have his own blog, that's for sure, and he'd have his own website. You know, he loved technology. He was a great inventor. He invented the lightning rod and the bifocal glasses and the Franklin stove. He was always tinkering in his shop trying to invent things. So he liked the technology. He was very entrepreneurial. He was always saying, how can we make this practical and useful and make a little buck off of it? And he also loved communications. In fact, the reason, once he had his print shop, he decided to create the newspaper and then Poor Richard's Almanac because they needed the content. And then, like a good small businessman, he franchised his print shops, took a 50% equity stake, franchised them up and down the coast. And then when he wanted a distribution system, he helped form the American Postal System.
And ultimately became the postmaster of the United States. Tim Till, stay with us. We'll be right back with Walter Isaacson. We're talking about America's first entrepreneur, Benjamin Franklin, which is also the title of his book. We're back at 7 Till. I'm Jim Lassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our friend Walter Isaacson, the author of Benjamin Franklin, An American Life. Folks, this is going to become one of your favorite books, I promise you. Benjamin Franklin was one of us. There's no question about it, and he is the grand dean, as far as I'm concerned, of entrepreneurs in America, and I've admired his life for a long, long time. And Walter, I'm really looking forward to hearing very soon that your book has been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, and I expect it to not only be nominated, but I expect you to win one for this book.
That's sweet of you to say. I think if I remember, I've never, of course, won a Pulitzer. I think Benjamin Franklin's likeness is on the Pulitzer, but I'm not sure.
Is that? Boy, wow, that would be pretty cool.
Sort of the first printer, publisher, newspaper man, magazine person in America.
Yeah.
I'm sure it honors the Pulitzers, of course, but I thought I remembered once seeing a Benjamin Franklin medallion.
Yeah, very well may, folks, but if you haven't heard it before, you've heard it here, that to look for that when they announce the Pulitzers next spring. Walter, let's talk about Mr. Franklin's service to this country overseas. He was, you point out that he was the diplomat's diplomat. I mean, he was such a successful servant overseas in France, especially, and also England, wasn't he?
Well, you know, first he goes over to England to try to avert the revolution because he believes that if you can hold the British Empire together, it'd be better for everybody, but that doesn't work. So he helps write the Declaration of Independence with Jefferson and Adams.
Mm-hmm.
In order to make it work, they got to go to he's got to go to France to get France in on our side in the Revolution. I mean, even back then, France was a bit of a problem. And so Franklin goes over, and he's a marvelous diplomat who understands the balance of power game they have to play, you know, with France, the Netherlands, Spain, and England. But what he really understands, and what our diplomats sometimes don't understand today, is that our values and our virtues and the things we believe in are the greatest source of our power. That if
yep.
we can attract people to sharing our ideals. And so Franklin was not only a realist, he was an idealist in terms of spreading the American ideal to France and around the world. He wore a coonskin cap and a backwoods coat, pretending to be sort of the natural one, because they had all read Rousseau once too often over there in France. And so he pretended to be the backwoods man, the uncorrupted man. But they adored him. In fact, the women started wearing coiffure a la Franklin, it was called.
He changed their fashion, didn't he?
Yeah, because they'd do up their hair as if it were a coonskin cap, and they'd all wear these little medallions of Franklin. In fact, King Louis XVI was so amused by this that when one of the women of his court kept wearing the medallion and doing her hair that way in the coiffure a la Franklin, he made for her a porcelain chamber pot with a Franklin medallion embossed on the bottom of it. So who knows?
What a great story. You know, I can just see him not only doing this, but being so aware of what he was doing and how it would impact people and how some people would be put off by it and how he would just be having so much fun knowing that they were being put off by him.
Oh, yeah. John Adams, of course, gets a little put off by him because he's this incredible celebrity. I mean, not since Jerry Lewis have we had a celebrity like that in France. So anyway, he's this incredible celebrity, and Adams is very, very jealous. Great rivalry, you know, great jealousy and envy there. So anyway, but most of the people just love it. And of course, France becomes the darling of, I mean, Franklin becomes a darling of most of the French people, and they come in on our side in the Revolution. And I don't think we would have won militarily the way we did without France. They supplied 90% of the gunpowder, and Franklin recruited Lafayette. And Lafayette
right.
ended up at Yorktown, the decisive
mm-hmm.
battle, with more French troops than George Washington had American troops.
Right, right. Yeah, the list of influence that Benjamin Franklin had on this nation, really, in some ways, it's sort of unfortunate that he doesn't have the kind of cachet as that George Washington has as the father of our country.
I know. You know, Washington was the first president. He was much younger than Franklin. Franklin was too old to be the first president. He was 80s by that time.
Right.
But it's, you know, I hope people enjoy the book. There are a few other books about Franklin as well, but I hope, you know, people enjoy reading about Benjamin Franklin. They'll understand the values and the virtues and the small business and entrepreneurial values that help form what we have as a republic today.
Walter Isaacson, thank you so much for sharing some of your time and this wonderful stories about Benjamin Franklin. Thank you for your book, too, Benjamin Franklin and American Life, soon to be nominated and soon to win the Pulitzer Prize, in my opinion. Walter, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, we'll see you next time.
I
gotta go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.